Seekers? No, I'm fine. I was just looking at this this quote from George Orwell. So many good quotes in Orwell. Good being very relative here, but you know what I mean. Jude sent this to me. Here's the quote. "How does one man assert his power over another, Winston?" Winston thought. "By making him suffer," he said. "Exactly. By making him suffer. Obedience is not enough." But coincidentally, when I got that today, when, you know, that's a broader truth, but it also has specificity. This evening, I received an email. And it sourced the law office of David Coombs, who is one of the attorneys representing Bradley Manning. And the post from Attorney Coombs is as follows. "Last night, PFC Manning was inexplicably stripped of all clothing by the Quantico Brig. He remained in his cell naked for the next 7 hours. At 5 a.m., the Brig sounded the wake-up call for the detainees. At this point, PFC Manning was forced to stand naked at the front of his cell. The duty Brig supervisor, the DBS, arrived shortly after 5 a.m. When he arrived, PFC Manning was called to attention. The DBS walked through the facility to conduct his detainee count. Afterwards, PFC Manning was told to sit on his bed. About 10 minutes later, a guard came to his cell to return his clothing. This type of degrading treatment is inexcusable and without justification. It is an embarrassment to our military justice system and should not be tolerated. PFC Manning has been told the same thing will happen to him again tonight. No other detainee at the Brig is forced to endure this type of isolation and humiliation." Posted by Army Court-Martial Defense Specialist at 4:53 p.m. 03 March 2011. The quote again, it's Winston Smith and O'Brien talking. "How does one man assert his power over another, Winston?" Winston thought. "By making him suffer," he said. "Exactly. By making him suffer. Obedience is not enough." What is being done to Bradley Manning is an outrage. And I think it shows, for once and for all, the dishonor of the United States military. The absolute dishonor of the United States military. The other night, I was going off about the $200 billion that seems to have been stolen through fraud, abuse, lies, deceit in our two war zones of choice, Iraq and Afghanistan. And This is money stolen by the private contractors. It's not money stolen, as far as anyone can tell, by soldiers in the field. This is money stolen by the contractors. And all it does is reflect upon what Smedley Butler, General Smedley Butler, said 100-plus years ago, that war is a racket. Of course it is. So, I said, can anyone out there, I challenge anyone in a friendly sort of way, except the right-wingers. I challenge them with a gun in my hand. but a friendly challenge to most people. Tell me one thing, that one project that the contractors have completed. Just one thing. Not the NGOs, not the projects done by private money to bring desks to school children in Afghanistan, or food to starving street children in Iraq. No. I'm talking about just one thing that the contractors have completed, or have done. Have done a tremendous amount of work at almost near completion. Well, I got one email, one, from Teresa. Mike, you asked us to do our homework and locate a project in Afghanistan or Iraq since our occupation and slaughter. This is all I could find. And what Teresa sends me is a picture of the new U.S. embassy in Iraq. And a little bit of info about it. Building work at the 104-acre complex in Iraq, known locally as George Bush's Palace. It's supposed to be a secret, but it is impossible to disguise the cranes dominating the Baghdad skyline. The new United States embassy in Iraq was scheduled to cost $592 million to build and will be the largest embassy on Earth. However, due to delays for various reasons, mainly shoddy work by the mostly Asian workers who were imported to do the work at near slave wages, the cost has soared way beyond that figure. To mention just a few of the many problems that have slowed down construction was a fire sprinkler system that didn't work. When it was turned on, some of the joints broke, some of the wiring melted down, and the workers failed to build a blast-proof wall. The estimated final construction cost is now over $700 million and will cost more than $1 billion a year to maintain. It will be essentially a small city with office buildings, a school, six apartment buildings, a recreation building with a gym, an exercise room, the American Club, a commissary, food court, movie theater, tennis courts, barber, and beauty shops. It will also have the largest swimming pool in Iraq, as well as its own electrical power plants and water plants. There will be a 1,500-member embassy staff, including 1,000 Americans and 500 Iraqi Foreign Service nationals. The buildings will be large enough to handle up to 8,000 workers. U.S. Embassy Iraq, you can probably find a picture of it. Astonishing. $1 billion for an embassy in Iraq. And didn't the Bush crime family make great sport and mockery of the lavish living quarters of Saddam Hussein? What do you think the people in Iraq think of this? They call it George Bush's palace. Of course, Barack Obama will be the one to inherit it, and I guess he will pass it on to whomever succeeds him. But what do you think the Iraqi people think of this? $700 million. It'll never be completed for that amount. It'll go over $1 billion, maybe $1.5 billion. Jesus, God.
a shadow government. It's sworn to secrecy. Its business is no business of the likes of you and me. Nobody knows who's in it. They've been carefully selected by partisan appointees who themselves were not elected. They hold top-level meetings at undisclosed locations to suspend the Constitution and sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared. And by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts?
Yeah, I guess I just got an email from Tim in L.A. A restraining order on behalf of the protesters in Wisconsin to prevent Governor Scott Walker from closing the Capitol. It was approved by a judge. The judge then ordered the state to open the Capitol at 8 a.m. Wisconsin time. I would assume that would be tomorrow. Failure to do so will result in contempt of court charges against Walker. And Tim adds, the people win again. I'd like to see him defy it. I really would. I'm sure the right wing has already been on the phone with this moronic Walker, explaining or trying to get him to do something to claim separation of powers, and the courts cannot order the executive branch to I am just so in awe of these protesters who have been there day after day after day. This hour, by the way, is sponsored anonymously on behalf of Sanchez in East L.A. You know, Sanchez who calls here a lot, right? Sanchez says, what in the world are they spraying in our American skies? Jets, which spray white lines, which dissipate into milky white cloud cover, increased levels of aluminum, barium, and strontium are being found in scientifically tested rainwater. What does it all mean? Please watch an important new documentary, What in the World Are They Spraying?, available on YouTube.com or go to LosAngelesSkyWatch.org. Thanks to Anonymous for sponsoring on behalf of Sanchez this hour. And by the way, an email from Kay in the course of a different conversation mentions that her father, Lee Christman, would have been his 73rd birthday. Kay says, Dad was my inspiration, mentor, friend, and a proud FDR Democrat. I love you and miss you every day, Dad. Like I say, it was in a context of something else, but in memory of Kay Petrini's father. We have, guess what we have tonight? We have a moment with Bob. As a matter of fact, I think we're going to do it when we come back at the bottom of the hour. A moment with Bob Alexander. I just figured that the pirates in Somalia had gotten him, but no, here he is. Dr. Saxman, who plays with the Count Basie Orchestra. Hey, just wanted you to know we're still out here. I've been so stunned by everything going on in Wisconsin and the world and the statements from people. I'm just getting tired. And then I made a mistake of getting into a long conversation on Tuesday evening with some club date band associates about teachers, firemen, Ronald Reagan, guys saying we have to cut the teachers' pension, that Ronald Reagan made the most economical growth, et cetera, et cetera. I tried pointing out corporate corruption, the rich not paying their share, et cetera. In fact, one player is a teacher and was pointing out the same things, but he was smart enough to walk away. I've reached the point where I just want to stop caring about this stuff and not be involved. It's so tiring. And I want to concentrate on my health and figure out how I can make some of this money that some of these folks have. Clarence Clemens just got a gig with Lady Gaga. See, I need a gig like that. Can make some good money there. It doesn't seem to matter what we say or point out to people. They're going to vote in the Scott Walkers and then say, oh my God, I didn't know he would do that. It's just sad. I'm getting tired of talking to folks and tired of signing petitions. Bro, sorry to be sounding so dark about it all. It's just tiring, man. It's like talking to the brain dead. And no matter, the same thing happens over and over again. I'm really going to try to get some exercise, watch my health, and do like George Carlin said, quote, when you're born, you get a ticket to the freak show. When you're born in America, you get a front row seat, end quote. I'm just going to try to get a good seat. Enjoy your shows, bro. Keep on keeping on. Dr. Sachs, man. Clarence Clemens with the E Street Band. He's going to work for Lady Gaga, huh?
Gee.
All right, we have a break here. Thanks. Thanks, Dr. Sachs. Dr. Sachs, man. We have a break here. We'll come back and have a moment with Bob Alexander. And this is a real vivid piece. Stick around.
It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. And it is time once again for a moment with Bob. Brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. This is called Street Corner Tolerance. Hey, Mike. In downtown Seattle, on the southeast corner of an old department store, a Jesus shouter shows up regularly, armed with banners, gospel tracts, and a bullhorn. Before the shouting begins, he sets up shop by leaning his crudely lettered placards with seemingly random quotes from the Bible against the wall of the store, then clutching his tracts to hand out to the heathen multitudes. One's titled, Are Roman Catholics Christians? Or Doomtown, a compassionate plea to repent of homosexuality. The Jesus shouter pulls the trigger on his bullhorn and lets her rip. He doesn't need the bullhorn. I've seen his act without it, and he could still easily bounce the word of God off the building across the street like a tennis pro. He's got the lungs of an oboe player. He can rattle off big chunks of scripture, diving deep into Leviticus without ever coming up for air. But the Lord God saw fit to give him the gift of artificial amplification. So the thunder of the good news is often punctuated with the squeals of feedback. The Jesus shouter does not preach of the God of love. A seriously pissed off Jesus is coming back any day now, with his sleeves rolled up and ready to pitch each and every unsaved sinner belly-flopping into the lake of fire and see how long they can tread brimstone. He doesn't talk about the righteous reward of living eternally with God in heaven. That's not the Jesus shouter's message. He's more interested in the details of what it's going to be like when you jump off the heavenly bus by rejecting Jesus and get on the express to hell instead. The fate that awaits all us sinners is what the Jesus shouter shouts about. If you don't rush in on him, probably in too much of a hurry to get wherever it is you need to go to commit more sins against God, if you don't rush in and take the time to catch his whole act, it's pretty obvious that the Jesus shouter is absolutely convinced that his name is written in the book of the saved. When he smiles, it's not because he's filled with the happiness that comes in doing the Lord's business. Oh, no. He's smiling because he knows he's got his ticket safe and sound in the inside pocket of his cheap suit, and you don't. He thinks when he finally croaks, when he's up there getting his heavenly suntan, basking in God's radiance, the Jesus shouter's attention is going to be elsewhere. He's planning on spending a good chunk of his eternity looking down at the squirming, screaming population of hell. He's going to finally get to see everybody who never listened to him suffer the tortures of the damned. Everyone who ignored him, everyone who made fun of him, everyone who passed him by on their way to having a life is going to burn. And the Jesus shouter will have himself a ringside seat. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. But all the Jesus shouter really wants to do is watch. Of course he's crazy. He's absolutely crazy. But it's the sort of crazy we tolerate because, well, he's harmless, isn't he? And that depends. What if the Jesus shouter's got kids? Is inculcating violent gibberish into the mind of a little kid harmless? What if the Jesus shouter's routine, in the Jesus shouter's routine, what if he replaced the word God and the word Jesus with Elvis? Would that get the Seattle Police Department pulling up to the curb and hauling him off where they keep the vocally delusional? Okay, forget the Elvis thing. Now, on some days, the Jesus shouter has a following. Three or four people hand out the tracts while he's shouting. Sometimes one of the shouter's associates is engaged in a discussion with somebody about some aspect of their flavor of Christianity. What if you saw your family doctor handing out some Christ comics? Would you ever go back for a checkup knowing that your doctor has allocated a lot of headroom for craziness? How much crazy do we tolerate before we draw the line? And where did we get the idea that tolerance is a virtue in the first place? Tolerance is a fair, objective, and permissive attitude toward those whose beliefs or personal characteristics differ from one's own. Sounds good, doesn't it? We believe it's how society can get from Monday to Tuesday without blowing apart at the seams. But an act of tolerance generally requires no effort. It only demands us to do nothing. When confronted with something that goes against what we believe, live and let live, blah, 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 blah. I think we've been engineered through our schools and churches to be tolerant. It's an easy grade to make when all we're asked to do is be passive. We're groomed to be passive. And our society is amazingly tolerant. We've allowed the government to illegally invade countries and murder innocent people by the hundreds of thousands. And what do? All the bailouts we're on the hook for add up to more than the cost of the First World War, the Second World War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, the Marshall Plan, the New Deal, and the landing on the moon combined. And what do we do? Well, we protest for a day or two when the anniversary of our war crime rolls around again. And for the rest of the year, we are the spiritual descendants of the apartment dwellers who listened while Kitty Genovese was murdered in the courtyard below their balconies. We've tolerated ourselves into hell. I found this from an anonymous blogger on the net. Quote, justice, the closest virtue to tolerance, begs restraint and the application of some concept of fairness. Justice also obligates one to judge. End quote. Justice requires us to think. Tolerance is passive. Pursuing justice is not. It was when we fought against injustice that our country became great. The Capitol in Wisconsin is packed every day by people striving for justice. On March 19th, the 8th anniversary of the Iraq War will roll across the world with protests. If only there were enough people to pack the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. that day, and the next, and the next, until the elected representatives who continually vote to fund the wars understand that we are not tolerant any longer. We demand justice instead. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Oh, my. This hour is sponsored anonymously on behalf of Sanchez in East L.A. And Sanchez added this to the sponsorship. What in the world are they spraying in our American skies? Jets which spray white lines which dissipate into milky white cloud cover. Increased levels of aluminum, barium, and strontium are being found in scientifically tested rainwater. What does it all mean? Please watch an important new documentary titled What in the World Are They Spraying? Available on YouTube.com or go to LosAngelesSkywatch.org. From Anonymous and Sanchez in East L.A. Oh, my. All right, what else do we have tonight? You've heard about the poll. We'll talk about the poll when we come back. The unions are going to hold a preemptive jazz funeral in Madison, Wisconsin, for the welfare programs that this degenerate little bastard Walker is and his cohorts in the Republican Party are going to destroy. I want to talk about that a little bit. And got a couple of emails here, one from Kate in the desert, one from Shalal in Charlottesville, and a couple other things. All right, so we have quite a bit to do before we sleep tonight. And you can if you were doing research on any project, just name one that the private contractors have performed, completed, without stealing and committing fraud in Iraq or Afghanistan. American contractors, you know, let us know. You can stop your research. We found one, and it is the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. We'll be back.
should rise when I gave the word. Now in the morning I sleep alone. Sweep the streets I used to own.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, a couple of minutes ago, I shared with you an email I got from Tim in L.A. that a judge had ordered the governor of Minnesota to unlock the state house under penalty of contempt if he did not. However, now I get this from the Washington Post. This is an hour ago. They posted this. A Wisconsin judge has ordered pro-union protesters to be removed from the state capitol. Dane County Circuit Judge, Dane County Circuit Judge John Albert ruled Thursday night that protesters remaining in the building should be immediately removed, along with any unauthorized materials such as sleeping bags and signs taped to the Capitol walls. The judge also ruled that the state violated constitutional protections for free speech and assembly by restricting access to the building. Okay. He ordered the administration to reopen the building to the general public by 8 a.m. Monday, allowing for a permitting process limiting the times and places where rallies can be held. Oh, I see. We're back to First Amendment zones. All right, well, Tim had it right. He just didn't have all of it here. The demonstrators have been rallying against blah, blah, blah. Now, here is a breaking news update. Dozens of rounds of live rifle ammunition were found Thursday scattered around the grounds of the Wisconsin Capitol, where large crowds of people have been protesting the proposal to rescind nearly all collective bargaining rights for most public employee unions. State attorneys revealed the ammunition discovery during a hearing in the Dane County Circuit Court, where unions were asking a judge to lift restricted access rules that have been in place since Sunday and swing open the doors to the public. State attorneys cited the ammunition while suggesting the building should instead be closed for a security sweep. Officials said about 100 demonstrators remained in the building Thursday, still ignoring what was a 4 p.m. last Sunday deadline for people to depart so the building could be cleaned. University of Wisconsin Police Chief Susan Reisling testified that 41 rounds of .22 caliber ammunition were found Thursday morning, scattered at several locations outside the Capitol. No guns were found with them. Reisling said, "I don't like to see live ammunition outside when I have significant crowds. You can't do much with live ammunition without the gun, but the presence of it doesn't thrill me." Reisling said police were conducting a sweep of the bushes and grassy areas in search of any more ammunition. She noted that ammunition often comes in 50-round boxes, meaning an additional 9 rounds may be missing if the ammunition all came from the same source. Blah, blah, blah. We talk about a red herring, huh? Union attorney Peggy Lautenschlager said in court that the request to close the Capitol was an overreaction to the discovery of the ammunition. She said, quote, "For all we know, somebody planted them there. We don't know if it was a protester," end quote. Wisconsin Administration Secretary Mike Hube told the court that it would take $500,000 to supervise the removal of the tape holding hundreds of posters, perhaps even thousands, to the walls of the Capitol. $6 million to restore the damage to the interior of the building, and an additional $1 million to restore damage done from items taped to the exterior. Jesus Christ, let me have that job. I'll come out there. Are you kidding me? $6.5 million to take down some signs? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's the truth. I know. Why don't you get Kellogg, Brown, and Root to do it? They'll come over and do it for you. Get one of those Halliburton subsidiaries. And I'm sure they'll come over. How much? You say $6.5 million? I'm sure Halliburton and KBR could probably do it for at least $30 million. Unbelievable stuff. Well, I just wonder what's going to happen when the protesters are physically removed. What do you think might happen? And, you know, as far as the ammunition, wait a minute. Didn't people used to show up at Barack Obama rallies carrying guns with the ammunition in them? So what's a few bullets? 22 caliber? Oh, please, give me a break. That's tin can ammunition. Unless one hits you in the head. Oh, now let's hear the squealing from the right wingers about this, right? Ammunition was found. Oh, god damn! Ammunition. Woo woo. Boys, what about the Second Amendment rights? You know, doesn't the Second Amendment cover ammunition too? The right of a people to be secure, to carry, shall not be. Huh? Well, hell, I think it's wonderful. I'm surprised some of those God-fearing, Constitution-loving protesters didn't show up with great big-ass Glock 9s strapped to their hips. You know what I'm saying? Isn't Wisconsin a carry state? Hell, I don't know. Man, you know what I think ought to happen? I think we ought to have just a great big fist fight. How about if we do that? No weapons allowed, no clubs, no sticks, no guns, no knives. Just get all the right wingers over there and get the left wingers over, the real people over here, and then have like a high school track judge stand there with one of those starter guns and just go, on your mark, get set, pow! And then just, you know, all the normal people and these crazy right-wingers can rush each other and just pound the living hell out of each other, and we'll see who wins. Would that work?
Want to lower the...
Guess what? This hour also is sponsored by Anonymous on behalf of Sanchez in East L.A. And Sanchez says, regarding this hour's sponsorship, Truth Seekers, March 19th is the 8th anniversary of the illegal invasion and ongoing occupation of Iraq. Please join me, Sanchez, and thousands of other concerned Americans who are marching and demonstrating across the nation that day. Please go to answercoalition.org. to find out where your nearest protest march is being held. Show your solidarity against the war machine this March 19th. AnswerCoalition.org. Solidarity. Thank you. Sanchez. In East L.A. with the message, and Anonymous, who sponsored the sponsorship, I guess that's the way to put it. Yes, Sanchez, I'll be in Washington, D.C. on March 19th at Lafayette Square, Lafayette Park, across the street from the White House. We'll see what happens as that day develops, huh? Now, regarding Wisconsin, Kevin, who's in Madison, writes, Mike, the interior of the Wisconsin State Capitol is all polished marble. If taking off tape marks is that daunting, I'll happily do the job for a tenth of the price they quoted, saving the state coffers from further decimation and paying for my return to school in the process. It's true that Dane County courts have ordered the protesters out. It is also true that the Dane County Sheriff has so far declined to do so. Scotty can't even go to a restaurant here without getting booed and being asked to leave. People are pissed. Kevin in Madison. P.S. I've lodged my complaint to the mic about their cutting your airtime. Well, good. Thank you. Maybe if more people would do that in Madison, they would get rid of the... Who is it?
Alan
Combs. Alan Combs, right. Oh, Jesus, God. With the Fox Radio Network. Yeah, okay. Whatever. This is from Panna, Minnesota. The unions who have been demonstrating in Madison are going to hold a preemptive jazz festival, New Orleans style, at 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. This is what this is from InTheseTimes.com. Pam sent it to me from InTheseTimes.com. Wisconsin Governor Walker would slash funding for Medicaid, but boost funding for programs that buries destitute Wisconsinites. Yeah, did you hear about this? The whole piece here, a coalition of public and private sector unions is holding a jazz funeral for the welfare state in Wisconsin. A New Orleans-style funeral procession, complete with jazz band, will depart from the Liberty Mall at 5 o'clock on Thursday and wend its way to the Capitol. On Tuesday, Republican Governor Scott Walker unveiled a budget that calls for deep cuts in nearly every area of government spending, including health care, education, and environmental protection. I bet it doesn't have anything in there about a state income tax on people with incomes within the state over, oh, I don't know, $2 million. I bet it doesn't. Jean Ross, a nurse and co-president of National Nurses United, plans to attend today's march. She says, quote, there's some grieving to be done for what Walker's trying to do. The march is endorsed by National Nurses United, Madison Teachers Incorporated, the Kill the Bill Coalition, and a host of other public and private sector labor groups. Governor Walker wants to slash $500 million from Medicaid over the next 2 years. Medicaid is the joint federal-state health insurance program for the poor, which covers 1.2 million Wisconsinites, or one out of every five residents. Jean Ross, the co-president of National Nurses United, says the budget is a power grab. Walker sparked furious and ongoing opposition with his earlier budget repair bill that called for the elimination of most collective bargaining rights. The budget cuts include Medicaid reimbursement for patients with end-stage renal disease. Jesus Christ. End-stage renal disease is the last stop on the road to a kidney transplant. Cuts in reimbursements could mean that the wealthy get kidney transplants while the poor languish on dialysis and die. Well, yeah, these are the death panels that psychopaths like... Michelle Bachmann talked about, and Sarah Palin, here they are. But the joke of any time a Republican says the Democrats are going to do something, it is part of a Republican platform somewhere. So here are the death panels, and this punk son of a bitch Walker. Haven't you just about had your stomach full of this little turd? Haven't you just about had enough of this guy? I mean, really. And now he's got all these imitators. Kasich. Another one, another little craphead who has not a clue. Take a breath. Gene Ross, the co-president of National Nurses United, worries that if nurses can't advocate for their patients through their unions, critical medical and moral decisions will be left to cost-cutting political appointees. Why, of course, these are the death panels. Only they're built by Republicans. God damn it, this is the whole idea. They've already done it in Arizona. Walker's budget also recommends increasing payments to counties to cover the costs of burying Wisconsinites who die destitute. Now, if that's not some evil crap, somebody tell me what it is. This little bastard sitting in the governor's chair, he's going to slash funding for people who desperately need it for medical treatment, but this little monkey is going to increase the amount of money available to bury people who die completely destitute. Jesus God! See, Ms. Ross said, quote, if he's going to let them die, he'd better beef up the cemeteries. This man has no heart. I'd like to find out if he does, you know? I really would. I'd be curious. What's the best way to find out if somebody has a heart?
Brother Paul.
What's the best way to find out if somebody really has a heart? Man. The, from Al Babe, the writer formerly known as Al Gordon, the cross-eyed neocon corporatist co-core governor Scott Walker is a power-mad dictator, pure and simple. The latest polls show that a huge majority of Americans are against this neo-push to destroy the unions and the Democrats. And yet he, Walker, demands that he is doing the people's work. So is he a liar, delusional, or just an ass blank? I can't say that word. I can't. I can't say the whole word. I can't say ass and then the other part of it.
No.
That would make it a whole word. I can't do that? Okay. Al Babe says, this is a coup. Junior being appointed by his daddy's Supreme Court was a coup. And this is even more so. This is a concerted effort on the corporatist Republicans' part to eradicate the Democratic Party by destroying their finances. We'll be right back.
No more Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
Yo, top of the crown. 21 past the hour. You know, I've mentioned this a couple of times since the event in Wisconsin began, and the protests, how you either believe the protests are effective or you do not. The example of Gaddafi's Libya is being used as an example of not. The example of Egypt and Mubarak is being used as an example of is. You know, peaceful protests, I guess, you know, a lot depends on how the power reacts, whether it's government or dictatorship or some little tin horn punk like Scott Walker. And it also depends on the action of the protesters, right? So whether it works or not, peaceful protests, there are a lot of examples, historical examples in the past century where peaceful protest was very effective. Nonviolent protests, very effective. There are other examples where it was totally ineffective and the people finally had to resort to violence. And I keep coming back to Mario Savio's speech at Sproul Hall, University of California, Berkeley, way back in 1964. You've got to try to remember if you were around. If you were not around, you know, go to one of those compilations of what was occurring in 64. But in December of 64, Mario Savio, who began the free speech movement, as it was called back then, said, "There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all." End quote. And that quotation from Mario Savio has floated up into my head so many times. The governor of Wisconsin, the governor of Ohio, the governor of New Jersey, the governor of Arizona, the governor of Texas, the governor of Tennessee, the governor of Kentucky, the governor of Pennsylvania, the governor of Illinois. Well, I'll leave him off for now. All of these people are just totally the governor of Georgia. You ought to see some of the legislation that's being batted around in this part of the South, where if the South ever needs an enema, the tube is going to be put into the state capitol here in Atlanta. But all of this effort that's going into the destruction of everything that people have worked for, that allegedly people fought World War II to get these protections. I mean, that was the propaganda on this side of the big pond, wasn't it? The American way. What was the American way? So it's at what point does the population say to these governors I just mentioned and the rest of them that are planning the same kind of assassinations against freedoms in this country, what do the people eventually do? What do the people eventually do? Do we stack ourselves like cordwood in front? Do we do a Tiananmen Square? Do we do a Tahrir Square? What? Now, I'm not asking you for an answer. I'm just asking you to think about what the tactic should be. If nonviolence, if peaceful demonstration does not work, then what do we do? What is the next recourse? What there? Because people are not going to say, "Okay, well, all right, you know, I tried. I went to the state capitol, or I went to the town square, or the capitol square, or I did this, or you know, I chained myself to this, or I, you know, let whoever I needed to let know, I let them know that I was against this, and nothing works. So what do you do then?" What do the millions of people in this country do who are sick of this, who are sick of these Republicans and about 80% of the Democrats? What do we do? What do we do?
Look away. Look away.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous on behalf of Sanchez in East L.A. Sanchez says, Truth Seekers, March 19th is the 8th anniversary of the illegal invasion and ongoing occupation of Iraq. Please join me, Sanchez, and thousands of other concerned Americans who are marching and demonstrating across the nation that day. Please go to answercoalition.org to find out where your nearest protest march is being held. Show your solidarity against the war machine this March 19th. AnswerCoalition.org. Thank you. Thank you, Anonymous and Sanchez. Kate in the desert is how you know her. She writes, Mike, I just finished listening to the Wednesday program, juxtapositioning the dead children in Afghanistan and the white pig in L.A. masturbating into a bottle, you know, the preacher. Well, I have no words, just emotions that have to stay contained. I reflected back to the time when I was living in the condemned gym in Pascagoula, Mississippi. That was my first trip to the Katrina tragedy. I was sending boxes of food to a platoon of Marines in Anbar Province. Halliburton, KBR, wasn't feeding them properly, and they put out a plea for food through a KOA Denver talk host. I communicated often with a gunny sergeant who told me that they were doing over there what I was doing in Mississippi. They responded to civilians who had been bombed and injured, etc. They gave up financial reimbursement for housing, cars, and injuries. Of course, he couldn't talk about the deaths. However, I know for certain that some of the money was put to good use. Of course, that was back in 07. After the platoon left, more death and destruction was going on in Anbar. Sergeant Matt, that was his name, did, however, let it slip one time that, quote, you are doing what we should be doing. We were deployed to the Gulf, the American Gulf, and then they moved us to Iraq. That was as close as we shouldn't be here as he could express. Kate, with an aching heart today. Yeah, the what she's referring to, and I had to leave some of it out, but what she's referring to is the article last night. these nine children in Afghanistan who were machine gunned or rocketed or blown to pieces one at a time, according to the one surviving witness. And the rationalization of this murder of these nine children is that the people firing the rockets and the ordnance at these kids thought they were shooting at what are referred to in military jargon as insurgents. Those are people who might be fighting an invader into their country. They are referred to as insurgents or terrorists or unpacified gooks who have to be destroyed in order to bring them democracy and freedom. And you know, so that's what Kate was referring to. And the fact that Petraeus, the U.S. viceroy, who is trying to and failing, and as I don't care who they send there, he will fail. It doesn't make any difference what American tactician, unless they're willing to do what was talked about in Vietnam. You have to kill every single person in Afghanistan. You have to kill them all. Kill them all. The same, I would think, as would happen in this country, although I don't know. The Republicans would all immediately surrender if we were invaded. The militia types would urinate all over their camo and run into the woods whimpering. But there would be American patriots who would resist, and I think we would resist to the last person. We would have to all be killed, wouldn't we? I don't know. Maybe not. But that damn sure is the case in Afghanistan. So, you know, Barack Obama or George W. Bush, or it doesn't make any difference. They can come up, they can invent a robo-general, you know, like RoboCop in Detroit. You know, get robo-general, and he will not succeed. I mean, people have been trying to dominate Afghanistan. We've talked about this so many times. I'm so sick of talking about it for 2,500 years. Or is it more like 3,000? How far back do you want to go? And it doesn't make any difference which empire tries to subjugate Afghanistan. They lose, and they lose grievously. And then the Afghan people go back to their 14th century style of living, which apparently they are content, not as insatisfied, but they are in content to do because it's all that they care to do. It's their goddamn business. It's their lives. And if the women don't like being beaten, then I have a suggestion. Form a gang of women and go around and castrate as many men as you can until they get you. And then another group of women do the same thing. Start lopping off their penises and their heads. But for the United States or the Soviet Union or Alexander the Great or the British Empire or whoever to ride into town saying, well, you don't treat your women right, so we're going to kill you. We're going to kill your women, kill your children, kill your men. That doesn't work, does it? This Taliban nonsense, these religious freaks, I don't care if the religious freaks are in Mississippi or New Jersey or Anbar province or downtown Baghdad. It doesn't make any difference. They are religious morons. They are anti-life. They are pro-death. They're insane. So what do you do about that? You invade a country like Afghanistan with all the arrogance of Western philosophy or Western ideas of self-governance, which is corporate domination of everything, and you think the people of Afghanistan are going to just say, oh, okay, the invaders are here. Oh, again? Yeah, they're back. What color are they this time? Oh, kind of pale. Okay, well, what are we going to do? Resist. Do what we always do. The miserable bastards will eventually leave. Yeah, but what about all of our children they're going to kill? What about all of our young men they're going to kill? All of the little girls are going to blow into red mist. What do you do about that? I don't know. seems to be our lot in life, to have this go on century after century after century. But resist, fight, don't give up. They always go home. So the latest chump who is in charge of trying to beat the Afghans, that would be General David Petraeus. The latest chump is now making plans to bug out. I guess about the same time Defense Secretary Gates bugs out. So who's going to be put in? Who are they going to put in next? They got another general someplace, another lieutenant general that gets his fourth star. Here, you go over there and solve the Afghanistan thing, okay? We have 200,000 civilian contractors there. And what, 100,000 troops? I don't even know anymore. Do you? Do you have any idea? What do we have in Iraq? 50,000? That's the very quiet force that's sitting someplace out in the bulrushes? Well, you never hear anything about that anymore, do you? 50,000 troops. And media, in this country anyway, have declared a blackout. Nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. Any violence in Iraq is Shia on Sunni or Sunni on Shia or Kurd on somebody or somebody on somebody. But you never hear anything about the troops anymore, do you? No American troops are dying. No American troops are being wounded. No American troops are killing. No American troops are, right? It just disappeared. But Afghanistan, not the case. Afghanistan, the death and the destruction continues. And we're doing such a great job, huh? Wait a minute. There, sarcasm button on. We're doing such a great job. We go over there and butcher their children. So that when the moms and dads come out looking for their kids, the kids went out to pick up firewood, they find their children. They find them here and over there, and there's a chunk, and over here's the head, and over here are feet. Jesus. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Yes, it will. Oh, I know a change gonna come. I said I know.
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
10 before the hour. Shalel from Charlottesville, Virginia. Shalel writes, we have a war on drugs that is terrible and a war on terror that is on drugs. It's all based on the lie that was 9/11. There are millions dead, including those nine children. These unjustifiable operations and bombings carried out by NATO and the ISAF and our treacherous military-industrial complex. These are big business operations, you know. Sorry, doesn't cut it. The hypocrisy of these funny efforts is reaching toxic extinction level proportions. They are protecting the opium crops and building their oil and gas pipelines in the name of freedom while supporting brutal dictators and not giving a damn about the people's right to self-determination. Muslims are vilified when they are no worse than any other Abrahamic religion. The war god, and that's a trademarked term, this war god of the majority of the population is a vicious, satanic bastard who loves suffering and death. Wait, he's Satan himself. Mike, I feel your outrage at this cowardly war motivated for some by profit and for some by prophets of this ghoulish false deity whose book inspires most of the hate killing and greed we see. After all, if you are basing your morals on commandments from a God who is keen on breaking each and every one with glee, how can you help not being effed in the head? Remember, this is a guy, this God, who said to Abraham, kill your son to prove you love me. Just kidding. Here's a lamb to kill. No wonder the humans are so effed up. We must continue to expose the lies and the liars. It is the moral thing to do. And you don't need any reward for that. Shalal in Charlottesville. That, you know, it's so true. I get tired of it, and I'm sure the regular listeners to this program get tired of hearing me going on and on and on about the destructive power, and it is power of religion. Colleen Raleigh. You remember her. She wrote a memo in May 2002 that described some of the FBI's pre-9/11 failures and was named one of Time Magazine's People of the Year in 2002, along with whistleblowers Sharon Watkins and Cynthia Cooper. Colleen Rowley, according to the Institute for Public Accuracy, said today, the charging of Bradley Manning with somehow indirectly but intentionally aiding the enemy is consistent with the Department of Justice's legal motion filed January 11th of this year in the Jeffrey Sterling case that asserted that leaking is worse than spying. Quote, the defendant's unauthorized disclosures, however, may be viewed as more pernicious than the typical espionage where a spy sells classified information for money, end quote. That's what the Department of Justice said earlier this year. None of the four actual identified real spies of the last three decades, CIA agents Ivan Nicholson and Aldrich Ames, and FBI agents Earl Pitts and Robert Hansen, who sold United States national security information to the Soviet Union and Russia, ultimately faced the death penalty. They did not. These actual CIA and FBI agents spying for the Soviets did far greater damage to the U.S. than the mere embarrassment allegedly caused by Manning. But they did not face the death penalty. The information that Hansen and Aldrich Ames sold led to the identification and execution of double agents by the USSR. But in fact, Robert Hansen's wife even got to keep her portion of his FBI pension. If leaking to the public to expose government illegality and or war crimes is considered worse than spying for a foreign country, the question then arises, who is the enemy? Yeah. Colleen Rowley on the information regarding the treatment of Bradley Manning. What has happened to this 22-year-old is just beyond it's beyond comprehension when you get right down to it. It's beyond comprehension. And there is the scene from 1984 where O'Brien is torturing and Winston Smith, not to get Winston Smith to confess to crimes. O'Brien doesn't give a damn about that. There are no crimes that Winston Smith can commit anyway. I mean, what crime? But as Winston O'Brien says the idea here, I'm paraphrasing, is to terrify you. It's to absolutely terrify you. It's not to get you to confess. And that's exactly what they're doing to Bradley Manning. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Do you remember back in the, I don't know, it was probably back in the bad old 70s, back when there used to be porn theaters in the downtown section of most big cities? You know, there'd be a theater like the Esquire Theater. And out on the marquee, there would be the names of the movies. And the only people that went in there would be people like Pee Wee Herman, who would go in with a raincoat over their lap, you know, and sit there and watch these porn movies. Hasn't the internet been wonderful? It's just privatized pornography, hasn't it? I know a lot of the right wingers who email me, are big fans of internet porn. But anyway, I digress. I can remember one time here in the Atlanta area, there was one of those theaters in the Buckhead neighborhood of Atlanta, which is kind of an upscale neighborhood. And out on the marquee, it said, Debbie Does Dallas. And it took a second. I wasn't the dimmest bulb in the marquee back in the 70s, but Debbie Does Dallas. Debbie Does Dallas. Well, obviously I had to find out what this movie's about. So, you didn't go to those movies by yourself unless you were going in there for relief. So I got a couple of my friends and we went and watched this, Debbie Does Dallas. Holy Toledo, I'm telling you. Well, guess what? There is a new Debbie and she wants to do Texas. Debbie Does Texas. She is Debbie Riddle. She is a Texas state representative. I bring this up because it blew right by us yesterday. Yesterday was Texas Independence Day. Did you know that, huh? It was on March 2nd, 1836, when Texas declared its independence from Mexico. And About 9 years later it became a state, but it was the Republic of Texas. The Texans, I love to tell you that. When we first broke away, we weren't a state. We were the Republic of Texas. Damn right. So I wanted to do this yesterday, but just acknowledge that Texas was all these years old. What is it? Almost 200 years old, right? The Republic of Texas and the state of Texas. Well, let me stop just for a second. This hour is sponsored by Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent. Thank you, Kay. Thank you very much. Sponsored by Kay Petrini. No message, except she sponsors the program. Thank you. So we have Debbie Riddle. Now, if you remember Debbie, do you remember Debbie? Debbie was the one last year who said that pregnant women from the Middle East were traveling to America as tourists to give birth to a baby that would then be an American citizen. And then they would raise their children to be terrorists who could come back into the U.S. freely as citizens. Do you remember this psychotic nutball?
Everybody knows that by then, by the time the kid is 18, we'll all have raptured. Well, not all of us, but people like Debbie Riddle. Debbie Does Texas. All right, just to refresh your memory, let's go back. Let's get in the Wayback Machine here. I want you to listen to Anderson Cooper interviewing last August, interviewing Texas State Representative Debbie Riddle. Anybody in their 60s whose name is Deborah and still continues to use Debbie, you got to wonder, don't you? Debbie? Hey, Debbie. All right. Listen to this.
Representative Riddle, you told my producer that pregnant women are coming here as tourists, having babies, and then going back home, quote, with a nefarious purpose of turning them into little terrorists who will then come back to the U.S. and do us harm. You said it's part of an organized terrorist element and could cost us lives. Where did you hear that?
That is information that is coming to my office from former FBI officials.
What former FBI officials? I mean, what evidence is there of some sort of long-term plot to have American babies born here and then raise as terrorists overseas and then come back here?
Well, at this point, I don't have the hard evidence right here in front of me. However, this is something that is being talked about by various members of Congress. Uh-huh. This is being looked into. Uh-huh. This is an issue with not only folks coming across our southern border with what is called anchor babies. And coming over for the entitlement programs and for that sort of thing, but I think that this is a lot more sinister issue. All of these issues we need to look at because this is a critical issue for all of the American public.
Yeah, but you have no actual evidence.
Other than that coming from former FBI folks.
Can you tell us who these former FBI folks are, what evidence they have, or what evidence
they're
showing?
Well, wait a minute here.
When your folks called me in the preliminary, that was part of the conversation. They did not tell me that you were going to grill me for the specific information that I was not ready to give to you tonight. They did not tell me that, sir.
Okay. Well, if you do have follow-up information, we'd love to get it.
At this point, I'm not going to reveal that.
So there you have, that's the first shot. We have a couple of these sound bites. There's Debbie Riddle, who got invited to come on CNN and talk about this, but God damn it! I'll tell you what, Anderson, and by the way, Anderson, ain't you gay? Why am I talking with you? But they didn't tell me you were going to ask me all these questions. I have proof. God talks to me when I'm asleep, and God told me this. And by the way, you know, I live down here in South Texas. You know, we grow some powerful reefer down here, and now I ain't saying I smoke it, but so Anderson Cooper just tries to continue.
I mean, if this is a real threat to the security of the United States, why wouldn't current FBI people be worried about it as well? I mean, why wouldn't this actually be...
You know what? That is a really good question because right now we have serious current threat that the government seems to be ignoring and ignoring on our southern border.
But they haven't told you any actual evidence, right? So some former former FBI agents have talked to your office. Have they given your office actual facts or proof?
That information we are still gathering.
Yeah.
But the point that I think you are trying to make is about folks coming over here having their babies when they're not here legally, or they might have overstayed their visa, whether they're coming from south of the border or whether they're coming from Middle Eastern countries. We must protect and make sure the safety and security of the people of Texas and the folks of this country is secure.
And you know what, Anderson, also, you know, I don't know if I should tell you this right now, but you know what? When I was coming over here in the cab that y'all sent, I got in my purse to take my medicine. And you know what? I looked in there and it was all gone. So I may sound like a half-wit moron here on this interview, but you know what? Anderson, I really am. I really am. I'm just crazier than a jar full of hungry bees. I mean, I just sit here and go nuts. So here we have Debbie Riddle. She is a Texas state representative. And I swear to God, I just love the way she talks. I mean, there's something about these high-bred white women from Texas who really know how to put on makeup with a trowel. I mean, if you've ever seen a picture of Debbie, well, Lord have mercy, she puts on the makeup. And I mean, it looked good. I'm not saying it don't look good. It looked good. But here's Debbie. She's been deputized. All these FBI agents have been gathering around this little Texas state representative's office down there in Austin and telling her all this stuff that they found out from their brothers and sisters up there in Washington, D.C., by all kind of things that are about to happen down here in South Texas. So that's why, you see, we need a law to stop these anchor babies. You ever seen an anchor baby? They're real funny. They shape like, well, like anchors. And that's why we call them down here in Texas. We call them anchor babies. So there's more now from Debbie Riddle. Debbie Riddle has more to say. And I'm here to tell you, she's got something. Why am I telling you about Debbie Riddle? This is so last year. Debbie Riddle has surfaced again in the news. Debbie Riddle, I wanted to give you the background. This is called background briefing. That's what we're getting here. Mr. Mike is giving you background briefing on me because I got some stuff coming up that makes me crazier than an outhouse rat. And wait till you hear that. Now, y'all stay with us while he does a break here and pays his bills. Or what are you doing over there? What is that you do? You paid us, I feel.
In Maine, and Washington, and California, I gave her warning and lit the fuse right at the beginning of the network news.
Your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So we're involved here in Debbie Does Texas. We're talking about Texas State Representative Debbie Riddle, who claims illegal immigrants are coming over here specifically to have babies in America, and then so that the babies will be American citizens, and training them to become tiny little terrorists raised specifically to kill Americans. Now, the reason I brought this up is because she has gone completely out of her crawl space again. This time, the sound we're playing for is when she went out of her crawl space, got off her medication, got on CNN with Anderson Cooper. And this kind of sets the stage. So let's go back and listen to some more of Debbie Riddle, Texas State Representative Debbie Riddle, being interviewed by CNN's Anderson Cooper.
The fact is, it is documented. It is common knowledge.
Right, but do you have a sense of how many of, say, the 60,000?
It is common knowledge that over 81% of the babies that are born at LBJ Hospital right here in Houston are born of women who are not here legally. It is well known that women come over here, cross the border, in order to have the babies here. Because once they get here, and once that little American citizen is born and becomes an anchor baby. And look, I'm a grandmother of 10. I love children. But the fact is, this is breaking the back of the taxpayers of Texas and the United States.
Right.
It's taking down our health care, yeah, our education, and, yeah, and it is a huge burden. But yes, they are coming across to have the children for the entitlement programs, for the health and the education and everything else that goes with it.
Representative Riddle,
anyone that denies that isn't understanding the truth.
But my question is, do you have a sense, out of the 60,000 estimated children born every year in Texas, in your state, to illegal immigrants, how many are actually here for that purpose, and how many just are their parents are here working and they have a baby, or they've come because they want better health care in order to have the baby?
If they are over here illegally,
trick question,
they are not here legally.
Well, you know, Dandy, I just never thought of it that way. I'll be odd damn.
If they are over here illegally, they are not here legally.
Well, I'll be double damned. I'll be double dirty damned. Lord have mercy, Debbie. You are just too strong for me. I can't stand this. Folks, can you believe this logic? If you are here illegally, you're not here legally. Let's go on with Anderson Cooper talking to Debbie Riddle.
Immigration officers are permitted to turn away pregnant women at the border if they suspect them of coming here just to have a baby. Do you think that's enough, or would you support a blanket ban on pregnant tourists coming to the United States?
No, I think that what we need to do is basically what every other country does. There is not another country in the world where you, our Representative Anchia, or anyone else can go and be there illegally. And we need to secure the border.
That's actually not true.
Let me finish. We need to secure
God
the border
damn you, Anderson.
So that we know who is coming across.
Right. Don't you interrupt me, boy. Let me tell you what, I'm allowed. I can say anything I want on your tacky-ass old left-wing communist television network. If I want to say there's nowhere, anywhere, everywhere, at where I can say it, and you can't stop me. And besides, everybody knows you're queer, so why am I sitting here talking to you? We are listening to Texas State Representative Debbie Riddle being interviewed last August. Why are we doing a last August interview? Well, you'll have to wait until after the bottom of the hour until I will tell you what her newest herky-jerky marionette activity is down there in Texas. Oh, Debbie doesn't stop. Debbie does Texas. Debbie does Dallas. Debbie does Anderson. Ooh! Debbie does CNN. It's just astonishing. It's just astonishing. But what we are trying to do here, ladies and gentlemen, you see, is to show you exactly how crazy these right-wing teabaggers are, especially the Republicans, and Lord help us, especially the Republican ladies down there in the Texas State Legislature. They are just beyond the curve. I mean, they are so far out there, they're already down there in Juarez or someplace like that. Now, let's keep in mind what this is all about. Debbie Riddle, Texas State Representative, was insistent that these little anchor babies not be born in the United States. Don't you love that term, anchor baby? That's an anchor baby. All these pregnant, dark-skinned folks was coming over here. Hell, you can't tell if we're from Mexico or from one of them places in the Middle East, but they're coming over here, and they're going to have these little terrorist babies. And they go to raise the terrorist babies. If they can, they're gonna stay in the United States and raise up these little terrorist babies. Maybe they go back to one of them places overseas, you know, where the Arabs live. But then when that baby becomes 18, 20, 25 years old, they'll send that baby over here to blow us up. Don't you understand how easy this is done? More of Debbie Does Dallas and Texas and Anderson Cooper and the United States and, oh, hell, the whole planet when we come back.
Radio.
The IR.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, and this hour is sponsored by Kay Petrini. Thank you very much, Kay. We deeply appreciate it. We are exploring the strange mind of Debbie Riddle, Texas State Representative Debbie Riddle, who last August on Anderson Cooper's program talked about these anchor babies
and how people come over here and have these babies and then raise them up to become terrorists to come back to the United States and kill. And she knows about it because her FBI buddies have told her about it. Of course, she doesn't have any of that proof with her right now, but that's only because she didn't have a chance to gather it all up. She's way off her medication. She's obviously just crazier than a loon, but this is the kind of people who are in lawmaking positions in this country. Now, we are doing this because yesterday was the anniversary of Texas independence from the country of Mexico. And it was during a time when Texas was actually its own republic. How about that? Anyway, Debbie Riddle, grandma of 10 in her 60s, who still goes by the name Debbie, and still remembers how she was taught to just load on that makeup. Am I being nasty to Debbie? You're goddamn right I am, because Debbie is a freak, and Debbie is in a position to make law. How about that? Let's go back. This is the last clip where Anderson Cooper interviews Debbie Riddle, Texas State Representative. Here she is.
The Attorney General of Texas, a Republican, advised the legislature in Texas back in 2007 that immigration is largely the purview of the federal government, and that basically as a result, a bunch of immigration bills in Texas were left to die in committee because the chairman at the time, also a Republican, said that the state would be tied up defending against lawsuits that they probably wouldn't win.
Quite honestly, it has now gotten to the point of border security. This is about security.
Yes.
Our border has got to get secure.
Yes.
The people are no longer asking to secure the border. They are demanding it. The emperor has no clothes, and I'm afraid the emperor who has no clothes is not listening.
Is that Negro?
The people of Texas are demanding that our border be secure.
Yeah. Ooh. Woo! Ah, damn! You go, Debbie. I just love it.
If they are over here illegally, they are not here legally.
You're damn right.
Now, this is probably the same Texas school-educated folk that turned out George Bush. It sounds, doesn't it just sound like something
it
George
does.
Would say? If they are over here illegally, they're not here legally. It's as simple as that.
I
can just hear Raisin Brain saying it. In fact, I think he has said it.
You ought to see the, if you get a chance, see if you can find the video of this. You ought to see this woman. This woman is just, woo, Lord have mercy. All right, now why did I drag all this up? Just to make nasty ass porn jokes about Debbie Does Dallas. In this case, Debbie just does the whole state of Texas. Is it to talk in this stupid-ass, phony Texas accent that I'm talking in and everybody in Texas is going, listen to that moron. What's he doing? No. I'll tell you why I brought it up. There is a new immigration bill in the Texas State House. The bill would make hiring an unauthorized alien. That's how folks are described. Unauthorized alien. Now you gotta wonder what's an authorized alien or what's an unauthorized non-alien or authorized. But the language, you see, the language is so demeaning and so sick, you know it comes out of the head of somebody like Debbie Riddle. The bill would make hiring an unauthorized alien a crime punishable by up to 2 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. Okay? A bill that would make hiring an unauthorized alien a crime punishable by up to 2 years in prison, in a Texas prison. Hot damn. And a $10,000 fine. Unless they are hired to do household chores. Are you getting this? Under Texas House Bill 2012, introduced by Tea Party favorite State Representative Debbie Riddle, hiring an undocumented maid, caretaker, lawn worker, or any type of house worker would be allowed. Well, Debbie, them folks have little terror anchor babies, too. Them folks bring over all kind of disease. Them folks are breaking down your barrier down there in Texas. Debbie, what are you doing? Possible answer, State Representative Aaron Pena, also a Republican, told CNN that without that exemption, quote, a large segment of the Texas population would wind up in prison if the bill becomes law. Oh, I see. So now let's get this right. When it comes to household employees or yard workers or people to wipe Granny's ass or to take care of little baby Wilbur's ass, it's very common for Texans to hire folks who are likely undocumented workers. You know, we have a lot of white people down there in Texas that just can't seem to take care of things themselves. I mean, who's going to mow the lawn, for God's sake? Who's going to clean the swimming pool? I mean, I can't do that. I am a Texas state representative. I don't have time for that kind of nonsense. Who's going to do the grocery shopping? Now I ask you, who's going to clean out the gutters? Who's going to take care of Grandmammy? Who's going to watch my children? Well, how do you handle that? You pass a law that says hiring an unauthorized alien. Jesus Christ, that's a scary term, isn't it? Don't you just see something with nine eyes and a huge bulbous head that just got off a flying saucer out in the desert someplace, and here it comes. If you hire an unauthorized alien under Debbie's bill, it's a crime, punishable by up to 2 years in prison or a $10,000 fine, unless they're hired to, you know, do the grocery shopping, sweep the floor, shake out the rugs, take care of Granny. You know, Granny been dribbling all over herself lately. Damn, she looks at me sometimes and says, hi, Wilbur. Wilbur's not my name. My name's Debbie. You're crazy. We need folks to take care of everything here. We need those brown people. White folk can't do it. Good Lord. John English, who is Debbie's chief of staff. John English. No! No! John English, who is Debbie's chief of staff, explained that this exemption for the household workers and the pool cleaners and the baby ass wipers and the granny vomit cleaner uppers, right? John English, Debbie's chief of staff, explained that the exemption was an attempt to avoid, quote, his words, quote, stifling the economic engine in Texas. Oh, my God. The economic engine in Texas will be stifled if you don't allow an exemption in this bill for the baby ass cleaner uppers and the granny vomit mopper uppers and the pool cleaners and the gutter clean out the levers and the lawnmowers and the grocery shoppers and all those people that the good, decent, God-fearing Christian white people of Texas need. It'll stop the Texas economic engine. Hey, woo, Lord. It is so hard being a Texas representative. I swear to God, Debbie, right? Legal ethics writer Jack Marshall wrote on his blog, quote, accepting household workers from an anti-immigration law renders the law impotent and self-contradictory, just like the current U.S. immigration policy, of which it is almost a perfect microcosm. It guarantees a measure without integrity that sends a mixed enforcement message and does nothing to stop the long-standing deplorable, we don't want you, but somebody has to do these menial jobs attitude that has paralyzed our immigration policy for decades, end quote. An ethics writer. You see how this works, truth seeker? Do you see why so many people of color look at Caucasians and say, son of a bitch, these people are nuts. They're wacko. What do you think would have happened if a black Texas legislator had introduced such a bill?
In the first place, are there any black taxis? Well, there must be. But can you imagine a black state representative introducing a bill like this?
Well, you see, we have to have our household help over here to, you know, make sure that granny's vomit is cleaned up and the baby's ass is wiped and lawn's mowed.
Can you imagine what they would do to that black representative? They would just absolutely, make life rough for him, wouldn't they? But oh, Debbie Riddle!
Ah! Won't you let me help you, mister? Just pull your hat down the way I do and buy your pants just a little longer. And next time somebody laughs at you, you just tell them you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas. Texas, won't you get away? That's right, you're not from Texas. That's right, you're not from Texas.
Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Kay Petrini, who also happens to be our education affairs correspondent. Thank you very much, Kay. We appreciate that. So yesterday was Texas Independence Day, March 2nd, 1836, when Texas declared itself free from Mexican rule. And about 9 years later became a state. And in all that history, Texas winds up producing something called a Representative Debbie Riddle. A nice white lady. I'm sure she's just fine. I'm sure she is just active in her church. I'm sure she is just great with her children and grandchildren. I'm sure that she's just wonderful to her husband. If he's still living, I don't know. Maybe he's not living. I don't know. But Debbie Riddle, who several months back suggested that people would come to this country to have anchor babies. And the reason she knew about that was because she had been told. She had been told by former FBI agents. Everybody knows this. Everybody in my church group, we all know about this. She had been told. So she went on CNN with Anderson Cooper. And she tried to warn the United States of America what was going on here. That these little terror babies, they used to call them anchor babies, but that doesn't do anything anymore. I mean, you think about an anchor baby, you don't really think of anything bad. Now, some people, when it started out, it was a bad term. It just meant that these great big old pregnant women were coming into our beautiful, beloved country, especially down there in the Texas Hill Country, and just dropping these little sprogs all over the ground, you know, just having these babies. But anchor baby, how are you going to be mean and hateful on a baby? How are you going to walk into a little hospital nursery and say, all right, get these little anchor babies out of here? Won't work. But you know what? Change the word anchor to terror. Well, it's a whole new ball game. Terror babies. Holy jumping Jesus. Look over there. The nursery is full of terror babies. Ow! I bet you half of them have explosives in their little fists. What do you want to bet? They probably have them stuffed in their diapers. What is that, a rattle in that baby's hand? That's not a rattle, that's a grenade. These are terror babies. I mean, only somebody named Debbie Riddle in Texas could come up with something like that, huh? And I can't help it. Here I go again. Suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. Jesus H. Christ said that, didn't he? Right? Debbie Riddle, I know you're a Christian.
I know you are. Either Baptist or one of them fundamentalist cults. I know you are. What about that? Jesus said, oh, never mind, Debbie. Never mind. As crazy as Debbie was about the little terror babies, as crazy as she was about people coming over here specifically, sneaking through the fence down there or over the line or coming at us through Canada, because you know the Canadians, they're not real keen on stopping people at the border unless they're American. And, you know, all these little dark-skinned pregnant women coming over from God knows where. It could be Uzbekistan. It could be I'm Stupidistan. It could be Debbie Riddleistan. It could be anywhere. And they're coming over here having babies. And then they're going to grow them up. They're going to raise them on up. Just like down here in Texas, we raise cattle. They're going to raise up these babies and teach them how to hate America. Just hate them, bring them back over here. Because, you know, then they can get right on through. Because you know why? You know why they can get right on through and come back over here and blow up with a dirty bomb and all kinds of death and destruction? Because they'll be American citizens. See? 2 + 2 = 5. I know what it is. I know. I'm Debbie Riddle. But her newest move, tighten up the Texas border. We're being invaded by brown people coming over here. And so I got a bill that would make hiring an unauthorized alien, one of them big old big head things to get out of a spaceship, an unauthorized alien. If you hire that unauthorized alien, that's a crime punishable by up to 2 years in prison and $10,000 fine unless... Those big-headed, unauthorized aliens are coming over here to clean up my garbage. Now, if they're coming over here to clean up my garbage and do the crap work that we fine Texas white people, Christian Southern Baptists, don't feel like doing, then it's okay. If they're coming over to rake and hoe, that's a little bit different. We don't want them to go out there working on them on big old farms, unless it's my big old farm. Now, if it's my big old farm, that's a little bit different. But we need the household people over here. So we're going to have the Border Patrol. When people start coming out of the desert, dying and gasping and dragging corpses behind them because it was just hell trying to get across the border, we're going to have the Border Patrol stop them folks and say, now, why are you here? And the ones that say, I am here to clean Debbie Riddle's toilet. They will come on through. Yes, amen. They will come through. But if they say, I am here for a better job and a good opportunity to become a productive citizen. Well, you know what we're going to do to them, don't you? Yeah, well, your imagination is a lot better than my vocabulary. That's obvious. Debbie Riddle. Debbie Riddle, I swear to God, I've been on this planet probably about as long as you have, and I have never, ever in my life heard of such a freak as you. Never. I'll see you tomorrow night, Two Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.